أعطيته بحسن القول. That if you are not able to pay back, you make them happy, you make them content by saying good words, by respecting them, by honoring them, by answering their message. Why is it that sometimes you lend some money to someone, right? And then they're nowhere to be found. They're wiped off the face of this earth. You ring them, they don't answer. You say salam to them, they don't reply. This is not husn al-qawl. And this is why Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is pointing to this very, very important issue. وَطَلَبْتَ إِلَيْهِ طَلَبًا جَمِيلًا وَرَدَدْتَهُ عَلَىٰ نَفْسِكَ رَدًّا لَطِيفًا. You need to consider the spirits of the etiquette of replying and answering that particular request. You don't give good with bad. You don't return good with something bad. And this is how Islam preserves the good relationships with people, where if we were to observe these rites, we wouldn't have a need to confront someone in a negative way and in a bad way. Because when I am in a difficulty, then I will know that this person is going to understand me, is going to give me a little bit more time, and I'm also going to consider the spirit and mental health of this person. You know, I don't want to put too much pressure on that person who's borrowed money from me, because they might lose their face value. They might do something else that is evil and bad. They might steal from someone and give it back to me, or anything else along those lines. So I don't want to treat someone bad, but it's a verbal contract, and I need to honor that verbal contract, and I should never break the promise. I shouldn't become wretched or evil, but I should try to be nice and benevolent, and always, always remember that I have rights, and I need to facilitate the rights of the person who I borrowed money from. We're going to continue on speaking about the treaties of rights of Imam As-Sajjad in this program for humanity in another episode. Until then, please visit our website or www.parstoday.com, or email us on englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صل يا ربي على طه الأمين رحمة أرسلته للعالمين وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن ختمنا.
Round the world with reporters.
Christmas holidays are almost over in Italy. It's been a particularly testing time for many, as the country is struggling to recover from the economic slowdown caused by the coronavirus pandemic. A study by the National Farmers Association called Diretti has found that about 4 million Italians have been seeking help, many for the first time, to put food on the table during these Christmas festivities. The association has warned the number of people needing food support has doubled compared to last year.
These figures give a snapshot of what the current economic situation is in Italy. 4 million people had to resort to soup kitchens or food pantries this Christmas due to the anti-COVID restrictions. The situation is rapidly aggravating, with our estimates indicating that this year many more will join the ranks of the poor.
About one-third of all people seeking help in Italy during the pandemic are first-time recipients, charitable groups have warned. In a reversal of usual trends, most are Italians and not foreign residents.
According to Coldiretti, among the new poor in Italy, there are those who have lost their jobs, small traders or artisans who were forced to shut down, people employed in the underground economy who do not enjoy special subsidies or public aid, and have no savings or assets to fall back on.
e quindi diventa sempre più difficile.
The economic crisis caused by the pandemic is wreaking havoc, especially among the middle classes. We weren't expecting this to happen so quickly.
Alcuni magari avendo perso il lavoro.
Some have lost their job. Some others work much less compared to pre-COVID times. Some friends of mine couldn't buy presents. Some had to give up many other things. It's really hard for an increasing number of people.
The government is reportedly looking at extending the current restrictions until January 15, meaning that non-essential shops will be closed and bars and restaurants can only do takeaway services during weekends. A major question is whether Italy's high schools will reopen as planned on January 7. Max Civili, Rome.
After months of deliberation, witness statements, and arguments made for and against his extradition, the day of reckoning finally arrived, when the world would know the fate of Julian Assange, the co-founder of WikiLeaks. Would he or would he not be extradited to the United States, where he could face up to 175 years in a US supermax prison under special administrative measures? That was the question on everyone's mind. So naturally, there was a big sigh of relief from Assange's supporters when British judge Vanessa Barista ruled against his extradition, a decision the US prosecutors will certainly appeal.
Since languishing in one of the UK's most notorious prisons after being forcibly removed from the Ecuadorian embassy, supporters of Julian Assange hoped and prayed that the courts would side with their position. But nonetheless, the verdict still came as a huge surprise.
I expected the worst. It's been awful throughout. It's been the way, you know, just everything about the case has been completely illegitimate, basically. And the fact that we won, Julian is free, is just beyond belief.
Yet for those closest to Julian, there was still room for concern.
Today is a victory for Julian. Today's victory is the first step towards justice in this case. We are pleased that the court has recognized the seriousness and inhumanity of what he has endured and what he faces. But let's not forget, the indictment in the US has not been dropped. We are extremely concerned that the US government has decided to appeal this decision.
According to Rebecca Vincent from Reporters Without Borders, the judge's comments still left space for journalists reporting on British and American war crimes to be prosecuted going forward.
The situation for journalism and for press freedom in both the UK, the US and internationally, because what we heard today, the substance of the ruling, or the substance of the judge's decision before she addressed the health issues, was very much that she agreed with the case that the prosecution had made. She threw out many of the defense's arguments, that the free speech arguments and the sort of the arguments that this was indeed a political case. So we disagree with those areas of the decision.
Assange's case has been followed by people from around the world because of its significance and far-reaching implications. And although many are happy with the judge's ruling and ecstatic that Julian Assange will be finally reunited with his family, there was still a feeling that although an important battle had been won, the fight to protect press freedoms and the right to expose US war crimes and crimes against humanity was far from over. Ahmed Kabbalah, London.
The Islamic movement in Nigeria held a ceremony attended by many of its members to commemorate General Qasem Soleimani. The theme of the event echoed the organization's earlier statement that the world cannot forget the martyrdom of the Iranian general. The Islamic movement described the U.S. assassination of General Soleimani as a war crime, adding that those who carried out the murder must be held to account.
Is very important as an international figure who was able to stop the capture of Syria from the forces of ISIS and Daesh. He was also able to empower the Islamic resistance, the Palestinian Islamic resistance against the Israel. He is also able to stop the advancement of ISIS in Iraq.
Various speakers at the lecture described late General Soleimani as a strong defender of the Palestinian resistance who took a stand against the Zionist occupation forces. They said General Soleimani played an important role in the liberation of the Syrian city of Aleppo and eliminating Daesh terrorists. The speakers described General Soleimani as a champion of interreligious harmony who will be missed.
We feel that we are together with the principles on which General Qasem Soleimani died. And that is the principle of justice, the principle of preventing trying to establish justice on the face of the earth, and also the principle of trying to prevent oppression and tyranny.
The lecturer said the martyrdom of General Soleimani and his ally, deputy head of Iraqi Popular Mobilization Units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, has added a glorious chapter in the history of self-sacrifice. The Islamic movement in Nigeria said General Qasem Soleimani was a man of God and a hero of Islam who succeeded in confronting and defeating enemies of Islam. They said Qasem Soleimani contributed in saving millions of innocent lives and protecting the holy shrines, thereby bringing honor, dignity, and pride to the Muslim Ummah. Benjamin Abdullahi, Kanu.
A ceremony attended by Syrians, Palestinians, Iranians, and Yemenis was held in Damascus to mark the first martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's ambassador to Syria asserted that the resistance front will continue to fight back against any aggression, reiterating the assassination was a sign of the weakness of the United States.
By firing the missile on General Soleimani, the U.S. targeted the Iranian people, their power, and pride. The U.S. wanted to thwart the resistance front's plans, but they failed. They have no choice but to leave the region.
Delegates from Syria's Ba'ath Arab Socialist Party and Yemen also delivered words on General Soleimani and his achievements in leading resistance fighters against the Western plots in the region. Vice Secretary General of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine said General Soleimani told him the only path to liberate Palestine was armed struggle and national unity between Palestinians.
And Soleimani,
General Soleimani urged us to depend on ourselves instead of others. Thanks to his efforts and advices, today we make weapons and the Palestinian resistance is currently in constant development.
Photos of General Soleimani were also exhibited, showing moments of his missions across Syria and Iraq. For years, General Soleimani led Iranian military advisors in Syria at Syria's request and played a key role in defeating Daesh terrorists as well as restoring security to hundreds of square kilometers across the Arab country. For over a week, Syrians, Iranians, and Palestinians have commemorated General Soleimani's martyrdom. And as observers say, contrary to the U.S. and its regional allies' will, General Soleimani's assassination has further strengthened unity among all members of the resistance front. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
A compact group of demonstrators took the street again in Paris to protest against police violence, and in particular against the impunity of police officers who used the very controversial method of knee-to-neck choke with fatal consequences. 1 year ago, Cédric Choubiat died after 22 seconds of knee-to-neck choke that caused him fatal wounds. He died in a hospital 2 days later. 4 police officers were directly involved and indicted for involuntary homicide. The family of the victim asked for their suspension.
We have asked the Interior Minister to suspend the 4 police officers involved in the death and the murder of my father. We have been waiting for the suspension for 1 year now. There is no progress at all. We are waiting for a reaction, a real one.
Assa Traore is the sister of Adama Traore, murdered also by the knee-on-neck choke, the same method that killed George Floyd. that led to a worldwide protest asking the ban on such dangerous techniques.
That technique of immobilization used by police forces must be forbidden. That technique is fatal. We have denounced that method for 4 years now because Adam Traoré died exactly the same way as Sedric Chauviat, with a knee on his neck. Both said their last words, "I can't breathe." If French authorities had listened to us, Sedric Chauviat would not have died.
This protest is not only against police violence, but also against the global security law that would facilitate police violence, or at least would make it more difficult to film police violence. It's thanks to video footage that the beating of a music producer in Paris by police officers last November was made public.
Abnormal things are happening in this country from the police side. The government is obliged to react because there is an important mobilization, especially from the youth, against the global security law. It's important to withdraw that law.
The march ended under the Eiffel Tower, the place where Sedric Chauviat was choked to death. Sedric Chauviat died with a knee on neck choke. As long as this method will not be forbidden by the French government, the impunity of police officers will continue. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
On the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iranian commander General Qasem Soleimani and his companions, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip came together to thank the general for his support in their struggle against the Israeli aggression.
The assassination of General Soleimani has not stopped Iran's support for the Palestinian cause. Our resistance will continue until the liberation of Al-Quds. The blood of General Soleimani will not go in vain. General Soleimani made a turning point in the history of the Palestinian cause.
Many Palestinian leaders and officials joined the mourners and expressed gratitude to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. airstrike in Baghdad on January. Palestinians consider General Soleimani a symbol of resistance for all the oppressed Palestinians.
We stress that the resistance will continue till all Zionist plots are thwarted in the region. The path of General Soleimani will continue. His assassination has made us more determined to keep the resistance alive.
Palestinians stress that they will follow in the footsteps of General Soleimani, who had a major role in supporting the Palestinian resistance in different fields and making a big difference in the balance of deterrence and rules with the Zionist regime.
General Soleimani was assassinated because he was supporting the resistance front. He always cared about Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and Palestinians. His assassination has made us more united in our fight against the occupation.
Similar gatherings were held in other parts of the region to commemorate the Iranian top commander.
Palestinians here consider General Soleimani a symbol of resistance. They say they will continue his path of struggling against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Palestine and Jerusalem Al-Quds. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
New crimes are added to the Saudi-led coalition's record violations of international law following the death of 22 Yemeni prisoners and the coalition's presence in 2020, all due to torture and medical neglect.
Torture has become a regular thing for the Saudi coalition, and unfortunately, these crimes are being frequent and vary from year to year. This year, 22 prisoners were killed either under torture or medical and food neglect. So we believe that there is an intention to get rid of the prisoners.
The head of Yemen's National Committee for Prisoners Affairs confirms that the UAE keeps hundreds of prisoners in its presence in southern Yemen, despite its refusal to attend any negotiations, while the United Nations has promised to attend amid the humanitarian nature of the prisoners' issue.
The Emiratis are an essential part of this aggression, and they are on the ground and they have dozens of prisons in the lands they occupied here and in the Horn of Africa. We have asked the United Nations to bring the Emiratis for negotiations, but so far there is no response from them and we are still waiting.
2020 witnessed remarkable progress and the liberation of 1,087 prisoners of the Yemeni army and the popular committees, 670 of whom were freed through UN mediation and the rest through local exchange deals.
The Saudi coalition's violations of international humanitarian laws are not only against the prisoners, but against the entire people of Yemen, who are the victims of an ongoing war on their country. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
Tehran University has held a ceremony to mark the anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's Minister of Science and Technology, who was attending the ceremony, said that universities and academic centers have great capacities to keep the path of Qasem Soleimani alive by studying different aspects of his personality and beliefs.
General Qasem Soleimani was a great person. His personality had different aspects. I believe that academic centers should study his behaviors and personality. I think his lifestyle and beliefs serve as a good role model for all the youth of our country and the world. We have great capacities and potentials at universities and academic centers in this regard.
The event in Tehran came as people and officials attended a ceremony in the city of Kerman, the burial place of General Qasem Soleimani, to remember his lofty status 1 year after his martyrdom.
The martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani had a big impact on the minds of people, both because of his own personality and what happened after his martyrdom. Therefore, for a researcher and expert of social sciences, his martyrdom provides a wide range of topics to study.
General Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, and his trench mate Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were assassinated along with their companions in a U.S. terror drone strike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Meanwhile, in response, the IRGC targeted the U.S. airbase of Ain al-Assad in Anbar province in western Iraq to retaliate the U.S. assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Moreover, according to Iranian officials, Tehran has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. for assassinating General Soleimani, and soon a court session will be held in Iran in this regard. Iranian officials believe that more than anything, the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has proved to the global public opinion that the U.S. administration is the leading sponsor of terrorism in the world. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
In gratitude for their sacrifices in confronting America, Israel and their tools in the region, Yemenis held an event to commemorate the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in the presence of the Iranian ambassador and representatives of the Islamic resistance movement.
Today, we live on the martyrdom anniversary of the two leaders, Soleimani and al-Muhandis. Remember the positions of these two heroes to stand by the nation's causes. Haj Qasem Soleimani gave himself to Palestine and the resistance and was intransigent in front of the projects of the Zionist enemy through which it wants to break up the region.
The participants recalled the actions of the martyr Soleimani and how he terrified America and Israel, which thought by assassinating him to weaken the resistance forces, but contrary, it lit a fire that would not be extinguished until the liberation of Jerusalem al-Quds and the demise of global arrogance.
We commemorate the two great martyrs, Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Muhandis, who strived for God's cause and are loyal to God and did what they were required to do. God gave them wisdom and strength. They were great people and we should follow their path.
The martyr Soleimani was an icon in the face of the Zionist entity and its projects. He played a great role in supporting the Palestinian resistance movement and stood by the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces in its battles with Daesh in Iraq.
Once again, Yemenis have taken a resolve to continue the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani in the face of years of aggression against the impoverished nation by Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies and their Western backers. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
people have gathered here in Kabul to pay respect to the bravery and the leading role of two significant figures against invading forces and foreign-backed terrorists, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and our national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud, were close friends and comrades in the region. Their sacrifices have not been fully highlighted yet, so we need to know them more than ever.
Given the fact that Afghanistan has been repeatedly invaded by some superpowers, mainly over the past two centuries, resistance is considered a familiar concept among the nation. Afghans have had some top resistance leaders like Ahmad Shah Massoud, a national hero who became the victim of a terrorist attack back in 2001. His characteristics are very much similar to that of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in the eyes of Afghans.
The U.S. expected to remove the name of Qasem Soleimani from the minds of resisting nations by assassinating him. But contrary to those expectations, he became a popular hero, not only for Iranians, but also for all resistance nations across the world, just like Massoud.
Afghans and Iranians share many commonalities in terms of history, culture, religion, and security. Many people here in Afghanistan believe that one of the major similarities between these two nations is their resisting spirit against the invaders. This event in Afghanistan marks the memories of two well-known resistance leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero Ahmad Shah Massoud. This comes as Afghans themselves are suffering from terrorism and are seeking to follow the path of these two heroes. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran by a shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran by a shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa by a shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Democrat Nancy Pelosi, the only female U.S. Speaker of the House of Representatives, has been narrowly re-elected to the position on Sunday, January 3rd, as a new Congress took office amid political uncertainty in the final days of Donald Trump's presidency. The 80-year-old lawmaker from California secured her fourth term as House Speaker by earning 216 votes versus 209 for Republican leader Kevin McCarthy. Her re-election comes as Senate control is undecided and a Republican fight looms over presidential election results. Democrats lost 11 seats in the November elections to command a narrower 222 to 212 majority. On Sunday, five fellow Democrats defected. Two voted for Democratic lawmakers who were not running, while three others simply voted present. Pelosi has been a fierce opponent of President Trump and his chief nemesis, saying last month that she wants to pull him out of White House by his hair, his little hands and feet. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written by Nicholas Fandos under the heading, Pelosi Secures Another Term as U.S. House Speaker as Senate Hangs in Balance. This article was published by the New York Times. Please stay with us to hear more about this issue. Democrats returned Representative Nancy Pelosi of California to the House speakership on Sunday, January 3rd, for what may be her final term, handing a leader control of the slimmest majority in almost two decades as Washington prepares for a new Democratic president. The nearly party-aligned vote punctuated an opening day marked more by precaution than pomp, as the 117th Congress convened under the threat of a deadly pandemic and awaited a pair of Senate runoffs in Georgia that will determine control of that chamber. Several House members sick with COVID-19 missed the session altogether, and others cast their votes from behind the plexiglass enclosure, especially constructed in a gallery overlooking the chamber. Her victory means that after 2 years as President Donald Trump's most outspoken antagonist, Pelosi will now be responsible for trying to shepherd through Congress as much of President-elect Joseph R. Biden Jr.'s agenda as possible. She said in a speech after winning the speakership, "The scripture tells us that to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under the heavens. A time to build, a time to sow, a time to heal." Adding, "Now is certainly a time for our nation to heal. Our most urgent priority will continue to be defeating the coronavirus, and defeat it will. It will be no easy task, with her party in control of just 222 of 435 seats, Pelosi can afford to lose only a handful of Democrats on any given vote. Emboldened Republicans are gunning to retake the majority in next year's midterm elections and are in no mood to extend an olive branch." Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the Republican leader, used his own remarks before presenting Pelosi, the gavel to torch Democrats' record in the majority, and effectively declared the beginning of the campaign to wrest power from them. He said, "It has been said that a House divided cannot stand," adding, "Well, if there is any lesson Americans have learned in the last 2 years, it's this. A House distracted cannot govern." Many of his members were preparing to use a normally perfunctory joint session of Congress on Wednesday, January 6th, to make one final futile attempt to overturn Biden's victory in key swing states and hand Donald Trump a second term based on claims of election fraud. The effort was destined to fail, but was certain to set a bitter tone for the year ahead. Pelosi secured 216 votes for Speaker on Sunday afternoon, January 3rd, keeping the factions within her party to just a handful, despite grumbling from some moderates and progressives eager for new leadership. Only five lawmakers ultimately broke ranks. Representatives Mickey Sherrill of New Jersey, Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan, Abigail Spanberger of Virginia, Jared Golden of Maine, and Connor Lamb of Pennsylvania. Crucially, Pelosi won over several Democrats who had defected 2 years, including Ron Kind of Wisconsin, Jim Cooper of Tennessee, Kurt Schrader of Oregon, and Kathleen Rice of New York. Many said they took her at her word that this term would most likely be her last. Slotkin said in an interview, "It's not personal, it's not malicious, it just represents a feeling in my district that we need more Midwestern leaders and we need a different crop that represents a broader swath of the country." With both chambers narrowly divided, Slotkin urged Democratic leaders to set aside messaging bills that have no chance of becoming law in the coming term and try to make bipartisan compromises. Representative Don Young, Republican of Alaska and the longest-serving House member, made a similar appeal when he rose to administer the oath of office to Pelosi. Young said, "I will be honest. I do not like what I see," adding, "It's time we hold hands and talk to one another." He suggested the two sides ought to sit down, but Pelosi refused. On the other side of the Capitol, six new senators were sworn in, but both parties were more concerned with the runoff elections. The outcome could determine the fate of Biden's legislative goals on climate change, taxes, and health care, his response to the coronavirus pandemic, and his ability to fill his cabinet and influential federal judgeships. Republicans currently have an edge, with 51 seats on Democrats' 48. Democrats would have to sweep both races to draw the chamber to a tie and effectively take control when Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, who would cast tie-breaking votes when needed, is sworn in with Biden on January 20th. Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, and the majority leader said in brief congratulatory remarks to say the 117th Congress convenes at a challenging time would indeed be an understatement, adding, "From political division to a deadly pandemic to enemies around the world, the hurdles before us are many and they are serious." At least one, the pandemic made itself felt immediately inside the Capitol on Sunday. Brian P. Monahan, Congress attending physician, strongly encouraged lawmakers in a memo beforehand to refrain from gatherings of any kind in their office spaces and warned that any family members accompanying them could be asked to produce negative test results. Inside the House chamber, lawmakers took their oath of office and voted for a speaker in small groups, rather than all together in the normally boisterous hall of the House. At one point, aides had to press a newly elected Republican, Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, to put on a mask as required under House rules, causing a minor stir. The architect of the Capitol even constructed a small plexiglass enclosure with its own ventilation system in one of the galleries overlooking the chamber so that three lawmakers in a protective quarantine could vote in person without mingling on the House floor. Two newly elected Republicans, Maria Elvira Salazar of Florida and David Valado of California, missed Sunday's swearing-in altogether because they were homesick with the virus. Third, Luke Letlow of Louisiana died last week of COVID-19 complications before he could be seated to the position he won in a December runoff. Gion Moore, Democrat of Wisconsin, arrived to cast her vote for Pelosi fresh off her own isolation, less than a week after she announced she had tested positive. Representative John Katko, a New York Republican who just won re-election in a Democratic leading district, said it's somber for sure. Katko said he drove to Washington alone on Sunday morning without the company of his family who would normally come for a large celebration. Republicans swore in 17 new women in the House, more than doubling their numbers from 116 Congress and setting a new high water mark for the party and for the number of women in the House. 122, 2 years after Democrats swept into power with their own historically diverse cohort. Marking the achievement on the chamber floor, Representative Liz Cheney, the highest-ranking Republican woman, claimed, "Republican women are here to work. They are here to get things done," adding, "As we like to say in Wyoming, it is time to cowgirl up." Pelosi has been a fierce opponent of President Trump and his chief nemesis, saying last month that she wants to pull him out of the White House by his hair, his little hands and feet. Pelosi told her leadership team, "I'm counting down the hours till he's gone." The two clashed bitterly over the past 2 years, particularly as she leveled impeachment charges against the president. Trump was impeached in December 2019 for abuse of power and obstruction of Congress charges, but the Senate acquitted him early in 2020. In Sunday's vote, among those who initially opposed Pelosi, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, one of the most high-profile Democrats in Washington, and incoming lawmaker Cori Bush, who is the first African-American woman to represent Missouri in Congress. Ocasio-Cortez said, "We are just an extremely slim amount of votes away from risking the speakership to the Republican Party."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's episode of Muslim Lady. In the studio with me, I have my favorite guest, sister, and expert, Sister Razia Shamani. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
On our show, we've been discussing very interesting and eye-opening topic. We've been rediscussing it, actually, in a very interesting and eye-opening method. Mm-hmm. It's the topic of haya, modesty, which, fascinatingly enough, you have reintroduced to us all, putting it in a way that brought us to a new understanding in regard with this term. and that haya isn't necessarily something that is limited to women, and it does not mean shyness, it does not mean not being confident about who you are in your own skin. Rather, it means self-worth, it means dignity.
Something that decreases your haya is intoxication. A couple of days ago, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she was saying that in one country that she went, the alcoholic beverages side was completely blocked down, and people were not allowed to buy any alcoholic beverages. This friend of mine was in Turkey, actually. Mm. But another friend of mine who said in restaurants in some parts of Europe, they previously used to serve alcoholic beverages, they don't do it anymore because in the Corona pandemic, people who have alcoholic drinks, they have less inhibition. Mm. And with less inhibition, you know, things that... this part of you that you would reserve usually, once you have this alcohol, you reveal it more to people. You become more closely to people. Yeah. Less haya.
Less so social distancing.
Exactly.
MashaAllah.
Isn't it amazing?
Ladies and gentlemen, seriously. When are we going to take this seriously?
I love this.
And it makes sense because we explain how haya and intellect are almost the same thing. The higher a person's intellect, the more they value themselves, the more they would abstain from doing degrading things.
Exactly.
And what alcohol does, it switches off your intellect, and then everything else goes out of the window.
No intellect, no shame.
There we go. We're talking about haya. We can continue talking about it forever.
Because there are so many different aspects.
Exactly.
It's Masha not just Allah. Covering the body. It's about living a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle.
Seriously, isn't
there
it?
There we go.
It's linked with mindfulness, with gratitude, you know, with the way you verbal abuse, you know, sympathy, empathy, whatever that comes to your mind in a research field, you could link it to haya.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say without exaggeration, it's one of the most noble human characteristics. The fact that sense of self-worth and integrity, that I am better than this, I am better than sin, I am better than corruption, I am better than promiscuity, I am better than profanity. It's so encouraging, you know?
Yeah.
It's so empowering.
That is such a beautiful
exactly.
terminology. It is so yeah. empowering. Rather than intimidating
exactly.
or, you know, keep up your self-esteem, keep up your self-confidence. You can do it. Show yourself. Show everybody who you are.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If you've got you a flaunted sort of mindset.
Yeah.
And I think this would be, this collection of episode would be a great answer to all those feminists out there that say being modest is a degrading attribute for women because it makes them shy away from mm-hmm. being noticed and being ambitious and doing whatever it is that they want to do. We just explained that not only is haya not exclusive to women, it's a human thing, but it is your best way to be your best, the best version of yourself.
Because and to empower.
Exactly, and to empower you.
Women, especially yeah. women.
Women, exactly. And the fact that Allah says women are gifted more with haya, doesn't that kind of mean that women are worth more? Doesn't it kind of mean we're more valuable? Come on.
Yeah, actually some scholars believe that there's a better way for women. It's more convenient or easier for women to gain, to reach the lofty status of perfection because of the attributes, the feminine attributes that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has gifted them.
Exactly.
Unlike many scholars who say that...
it's impossible for women.
Yeah, because they're not qasal uqul, you know, they have their
impaired
yeah. minds, you know, they have problem thinking and reasoning and
yeah,
whatever.
They're hormonal and they can't even pray half their lives.
Exactly. So because of this, men are, you know... they have more potential to become
perfect
human beings. But when you
there's
see
there's actually
that
a hadith from Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, where His Eminence says, and I love this hadith so much, and I've repeated a cajillion times on my Instagram, and I've flaunted it to the universe. His Holiness says, "أكثر الخير في النساء."
Wow.
Most of goodness is within women.
Isn't this fabulous?
It is fabulous.
SubhanAllah, such a beautiful religion that esteems and honors and dignifies women to this extent.
Exactly.
Remember that in the previous part we said that Shaitan promised that he would tempt human beings, yep. And لَأُغْوِيَنَّهُمْ, right?
Yes.
So we have to take into consideration that based on the verses of the Noble Quran, this could happen, this temptation, this being trialed in a specific way to be tempted by Shaitan could happen only if you want it to happen.
What does that mean?
Because in the Noble Quran it says, "Inna ja'alna shaitan awliya lil-ladina la yu'minun." La ikraha fid-din. You can choose to be a believer or a non-believer. But then, if you're a non-believer, whatever happens to you, it's your own fault. You pay the price of your decision. There was a psychologist saying that when I want to say something to my son, like he says, "Dad, can I go to this party my friends are throwing?" And he says, "You can go if you want, but I am not going to let you. But still, if you want to go, it's your choice. If you go, you're going to pay for the consequences."
Okay.
So there are two choices. Either that you stay,
yeah,
and you can have my consent and
my satisfaction
with you, and you can have whatever bonuses that you want. Or you can go, but it's not with my permission.
Uh-huh.
And you will pay for the consequences.
Interesting.
You see, the same story is here.
Exactly.
You cannot have faith in God. You're free. But then the consequence is that your awliya, your guardians, your torch of path in life will be the shayateen, the Satans.
My Lord, show me right from wrong. Give me light, make me strong. I know the road is long. Make me strong. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost touch. I know the road is long. Make me strong.
Again, in another verse of the Noble Quran, in the famous verse of Ayatul Kursi in chapter Baqarah,
yes.
Allahu waliyul ladina amanu. So it depends who you put your trust in. Isn't it beautiful?
It is.
Everything is so simple, but yet it becomes very challenging.
Yeah, it's
in the
simple,
trials of
but
life.
It's not easy. Oh no, it's not easy
it's
at all.
It's very, very difficult.
Young butterfly.
So let me just translate it. It says, "Allah is the guardian of those who believe. He brings them out of the darkness into the light." And this is verse 257 of Baqarah. We already have talked about a lot of the manifestations of Haya. We're just going to review them all together as one group. We have it in the Noble Quran in the beautiful story of Qasas, chapter Al-Qasas, verses number 23 to 25, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala brings this fabulous story into a picture where there are sheep, flocks of sheep, different shepherds, and there are two lady shepherds where...
with their herd.
With their herd, and there is water, and they are not going forward to mingle with the men.
Men, yeah.
Now, being a shepherd, it's a male kind of
job,
but back then, the daughters
of the
prophet...
And they had an old dad. Their dad was old.
Yeah, you know, maybe they had to do it. Yeah, as you said,
exactly.
their father was old. So they were doing this job, but they were reserving the boundaries of haya at the same time that they were working. So you can see, sometimes it's possible to do a male job, if you have to do it,
exactly.
If you're in certain conditions that you have to do it. But it doesn't mean that once you do that job, you have to cross the lines. you can still have preserve those lines, the red
lines. Still hold your own value and your boundaries as a woman. And I think that's so beautiful the way you said. By the way, we kept our promise, ladies and gentlemen. I know, like, 6 episodes ago, our expert promised us this story about one of the most beautiful instances of haya in the Quran in relation with the daughters of a prophet of Allah. They were shepherd ladies, and they had a herd, and there was a well, and a lot of other men were watering their herds there, and the women stayed back.
And actually, there was no gentleman saying ladies first.
Exactly.
But there was one gentleman. He has been brought up in the palace. And he's a prince. So this gentleman comes along, approaches the girls and asks for the reason why they're standing back. And they say because of the men. And he does the job for them.
And waters their
herd. And waters the flock. And then the girls, they were also very noble ladies. A sign of showing appreciation, they invite him. He said, we have an old father, you know, he would like to show his appreciation to you. And they invite him to join them. And here again, we have another beautiful instance of haya, that they weren't, you know, walking in a way to attract attention. Mm. And the Noble Quran specifically mentions the manner of walking of this noble lady. That
prophet.
It says, فَجَاءَتْهُ إِهْدَاهُمَا تَمْشِي أَلَسْتَهِيَا. I love this verse so much.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So then here, we have instances of verses in the Noble Quran talking about hijab of body parts. We even had that in the verse that was talking about women and men guarding their eyes and not to stare at, you know, each other. And at the end of the verse regarding women, because women are the epitome of beauty and delicacy and femininity, they have something treasurable that they have to only show it to unique people.
Yeah, exactly. So that would value them.
Exactly. And that would style their life in a way that would give them more peace of mind.
Mm.
You know, give them the shelter of a home, of a family.
Unfortunately, it hurts and aches my heart to say that we are out of time for today's episode of Muslim Lady. Until another segment, we leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female, and made us into nations and tribes, so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.